Well, I'm not sick, but you just said you were getting over being sick, Jimmy.
Yes, I'm coming down. Ever since I went to Sweden, I really came back with a cough that wouldn't relent. Finally, it's relenting, but I get a little bit of spasms now and again.
And David, you are in the middle of sick.
Yeah, and I deserve it.
You deserve it.
Yeah. A few days ago, we had dinner with the in-laws, and I was telling them, I don't get sick unless it's COVID. Yeah.
Oh, you're bragging about your stamina.
Check out my immune system.
Yeah. And then here we are. So I was asking for it.
Yeah. I think you do deserve it. I'm just kidding. I hope you get feeling better. Cool. Well, I mean, I'm going to get sick now because I'm going to say the thing that you just said, but I typically don't get sick either. I think COVID is the only time that I've gotten legitimately sick in the last several years.
That's me. Yeah, is me.
I've had COVID like 8 times, I think.
Ooh.
I think I've had COVID a lot because I just stopped checking. I guess everyone's like, did you check? I'm like, what difference does it make at this point? Whether I have it or not, I'm not going to die.
Well, it's really interesting because
I stopped checking like the last 3-4 times I got a cold. I just didn't check.
Yeah, I mean, like even after things loosened up and after the scare of it was subsided a little bit, still it was like, if you think you are sick, go ahead and check, and then here are the precautions. And now, as of today, it's like, if you have a fever, don't go around people. And once the fever's gone, you're good, which is like every other sickness. So, if you're sick, stay home, you know? But
it is unseasonably warm, which is really nice.
It's crazy.
It's not snowing there yet. I assumed you would have snow on the ground.
No, it is.
It's not 70 degrees.
Yeah, 67 degrees right now outside.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
It's nice. It's really nice.
It's been in the 80s here last week, and it's finally just dropped down into the 70s and 60s this week, and it's about time. But we are finally getting some rain, which I texted you guys this morning. I'm like, are you guys want to record? Because I was sitting on the back porch listening to the rain, which is like one of my favorite things in all of life. So.
Oh, I didn't get your text. That just came in.
Oh. Yeah, I assumed you didn't get it because I think you probably would have been the one to be like, no, let's just listen to the rain. Yeah, we don't need to record.
I was already up. I got my setup all organized. I have my pick of the week, and I'm just sitting there drinking coffee, watching YouTube, and then the text came through. I'm like, I'm all ready to go. Let's do it.
Well, I don't have a pick, so I'm gonna have to do that while you guys are talking this episode. But
so, happy 10th anniversary again, everybody!
10 again, years. We are past it, man. We are into the 10th year now.
You know what we learned?
We're into the 11th year.
That's what I meant.
Yeah. What we learned on vacation was if you tell the restaurant that it is your 10-year wedding anniversary, they will treat you so good. You get free desserts, and we got fancy drinks that wasn't on the menu, and it happened multiple times when we were on vacation. So I think we're just going to ride out the 10-year anniversary for a long time, as we should with the show as well.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. We'll have to actually meet up somewhere and tell them it's our 10-year anniversary for the podcast and see if they give us free desserts.
They won't care.
I don't think they're going to be like...
Just what the world needs, another podcast.
Right?
Yeah. Well, what's been going on? What have you guys been up to?
What did I do? I just published a video, an update on the horse barn, which was overdue. And in it, I talk about the siding. And I announced a new partnership with an electrical company. And it was one of those videos where I was struggling through it all Saturday, and I just kept going back to it. I'm like, there's no story here. I have to do this because there's some obligations. I have to do this video, but it could be a reel and get it all through in a reel, but I'm stressed. It turned out to be about a 15-minute video because there's lots of good footage I didn't want to just not show. Long story, I just published it. It's like, whatever. And you know, you don't feel great about a video. You don't publish it. You don't promote it. You don't put it on Twitter. You don't put it on Instagram. You know, I don't know if you guys ever had that. I put out a couple of duds, but it turned
all
out
mine
to be
are bangers. They're just all bangers.
But it was,
and you know it ahead it of
was,
time.
Yeah,
it
was, yeah.
And I put in the title. I said a few update and a few announcements. Basically, just a vlog video. That's what it turned into. And I don't know, I just wasn't feeling it. It wasn't, but it's performing okay. So whatever, whatever's whatever. But I've been just jamming all week in the leather shop. I started playing with pottery again this week for no good reason. Just playing around, just doing some hand building techniques because I don't have a wheel. I started sketching up a concept for a throw wheel that I could make with parts I have lying around here. Really just more for the video content, but I do need one. I can go buy one, but I want to play with making one, a little unusual one. So I've been dealing with that. And then I'm going away. This as soon as the podcast is over, I got to drive to Boston. And me, Derek, and John Graz are going to Graphic Expo for Aeon Laser in Charlotte. So I'm going to be in Charlotte. So that's going to happen the next couple of days. So probably going to be traveling into some really nice weather, I think. I think that'd be cool. Oh, but besides all that, the most important thing to announce is I got my sawmill running and cutting. And I've been collecting clips and video of my sawmill every time I play with it. Eventually, there'll be a long-form video or two or three, of course. But in general, Rob had this locust log on his property. So we brought it over. We got two perfect cuts out of it, big, long, slabby cuts. Thing was about 8 feet long.
Slabby cuts?
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, we were having problems with it. And we dialed it in. We played with it for hours. And then we got it cutting fairly perfectly. But it always pays to read the instructions before you turn on a $40,000 machine. I was like, I know how to use bandsaws. What are you talking about? We found all these very important details about blade tensioning and getting the blade at the right. I guess what happened is that we got lucky because the blade was really sharp. And when the blade's really sharp, adjustments aren't as important. But when it starts to get dull, then the blade wants to wander. You really got to coax the blade to do what you want. And once it got dull, the blade started drifting. And then eventually it popped off and bent and put a new blade on. And that's when I really started dialing it in. But we got it good now. Got it good. And I'm really looking forward to getting some logs. I'm formulating a concept for next summer where me and some of the guys I met in Sweden build a log cabin in my backyard. So we're kicking around some ideas. So that's really something I'm interested in.
So that's a long-term project. I'm always a little amazed that these saws can cut through a log because that piece on top is going to be hundreds of pounds because it's still wet wood. And that blade is able to cut, you know, 3-4 foot wide with hundreds of pounds on top of it.
Yeah. Well, right where the teeth are, you still kind of got to hold out because it's not collapsing really at that point. But also this saw has a 5-gallon reservoir and it trickles water on the blade, which lubricates the blade.
Okay.
And you're supposed to put a little soapy water in there. So I put a little dish detergent in the 5 gallons and it did make a difference because the first few cuts I made, I didn't have water. So I was just tempting fate, but it worked good. Because I was cross-cutting cookies, which I showed on Instagram. And those are cut a lot easier than going with the grain. Because once you're in the grain, the blade will go up or down or in the grain, especially when the blade gets duller. It's going to be fun, though. I'm really excited to play with it. And I got lots of ideas. I just got to get logs. That's the hard part.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's like one of those things. I'm sure you could occasionally find a whole bunch of logs, but then you have to hang on to them. Store them until you're ready to use them, and you never know what you're going to need to use. And then it's not like you can, I've got a project for a log. I'll just run out and find a log real quick.
And the log Rob had in his backyard was shorter than, it was short. I mean, maybe it was 8 feet long, but I can cut up to 20 feet, 18 feet on this thing.
Wow.
And that log was almost 2,000 pounds. Rob just did a quick calculation based on the diameter and the length. Close to 2,000 pounds. And my tractor, which is a bigger, oversized tractor, more like a homeowner, but like a larger farm tractor, the back wheels were picking up. I have to get a ballast to put on the back. But if I get a bigger log than that, So
time for a bigger tractor.
Yeah, I got to get another one.
You don't. Well, David, what about you? What have you been up to?
So it's funny, Jimmy mentioned filming something and trying to find the story in there. I was kind of in the same boat. I'm making a tool bench for the shop, and I've made tool benches before. And I'm like, it makes it more worth it if I can figure out how to film it and put it as a video because it makes the time worth it. And so it's all out of plywood, and I just stumbled upon the story. Usually I'm using Baltic birch plywood, and birch plywood has gone up in price you know, like 4 or 5 years ago. And my plywood dealer now has what they call import birch. Technically, all birch plywood is import, but this is from Indonesia instead of the Baltic region. And so I'm using that, and I'm comparing the import birch to the Baltic birch. And then I also go to Home Depot, Lowe's, and Menards and show the prices that and the quality that they have compared to what you can get. So I did find the story. I think it was last week. One of the questions that we answered was, what is one of the things that you've learned over? I don't remember the exact question, but my answer to the question was, don't buy plywood, lumber, and metal supplies from your home center. Buy them from a plywood dealer, a lumber yard, and your metal supply. And I kind of use that as like, that's the story of this video. Why you want to go find specialty plywood, how the quality is better, and actually show why it's better. So yeah, I'm building a two-a bench, but there's a little bit more to it. And I just got lucky and stumbled upon the story.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And I'm so proud of myself. I've been using Fusion for years, but I always kind of stumble through it. And a lot of times I start off thinking I'm going to do the parametric thing, and I do. And then it breaks somewhere along the lines. And then I just say, forget it. I just need to draw what I need to draw so I can get the measurements. But on this particular one, I checked all of my parameters every time I added a new thing to make sure it was going to expand and contract and do all the things when you change the parameters. And when I got done with the tool bench file, it's so satisfying when it just works and I can change every single parameter. It's going to be very useful for me in the future when I need to make another tool bench that's a different height and a different length and a different depth. I can just punch those numbers in and it spits out a new model. It's so nice. And of course, it'll be available to Patreon members and all plans and stuff. So when it works, it's so satisfying.
Yeah, it really is. It's surprising how enjoyable that is.
Yeah, yeah.
I was going through with two of my sons, I don't know, a couple of months ago. I was kind of giving them a little crash course in Fusion, just showing them what it could do and stuff. And I was talking about the parameters and pulled up the model of the four-poster bed that I made for my daughter. And she had a queen-size mattress because it was our spare bedroom mattress. And so I made this bed to fit that mattress. And then when we were making the plans for it, when I was going to make the model, we knew that we were going to be making plans for it. And we're like, well, if we're going to do a four poster, we may as well do one for a king size bed as well. And so I built the whole bed with the parameters involved, and it took a little bit of doing because there was a lot to it. But by the time we got done with the model, it was like, well, we need plans for a king size. You just change the dimensions of the mattress and then everything else, the number of slats, the everything just like grows to it. And then, well, we're already here. We may as well make a full size and a queen and a twin. And it was just literally changing numbers to get models for different size beds. And man, that felt cool. Like mm-hmm. That was way cooler than any other time I had used the stuff, you know, the parameters in that way. But anyway, it's worth the effort.
One of my Discord members, introduced me to a plugin called Mapboards Pro for Fusion. And it is a cutless plugin where you can just select your model and you can say, spit it out on a 4x8 board. I know there is a feature built in the Fusion called Range, but this one works so much easier and there's more parameters. And it's just, I personally don't rely on cut lists very much. Usually when I need to optimize my plywood boards, I will take all the pieces and then lay them out in Illustrator and kind of rearrange them. I'm like, okay, I need two sheets of 4x8 plywood. This Mapboards Pro plugin just spits it out onto plywood sheets instantly, quickly. I can print out the it will make like a vector file, like a DXF file, and I can print that out. It's just so nice. And I talk about that in the video.
So I've never said this publicly, ever. We built our own version because I've used map boards, and we ended up making our own cut list tool for Fusion. And it is better than map boards.
What?
I mean, in my opinion, maybe it's not, I don't know. But like I used map boards for a couple of years, and it is perfectly good at doing what it does. They have trouble keeping it up to date with as Fusion changes, I think. And so we ended up, my brother's a software, he was a software engineer for a long time as well. We worked with him to work on an algorithm for chopping the materials down and fitting them effectively on the sheets. And then, you know, Forby's a software guy, front end guy as well, and a designer. So we've been working on this thing passively for a couple of years now, but it's what I use to make all of the cut list. Huh. And it is one of those, like, as soon as I say that, everybody's going to go, well, that's your product, Bob. Right. That's the thing that you should be selling. Yes, I understand. Writing software for mass consumption is difficult. And so, you know, that's a thing that we're actively working on. But I have never told anybody that before. Mainly because it's not ready to be released. Yeah. And I'm only bringing it up because I also have map boards. Like, I paid for it and have used it many, many times.
Explain what map boards is great. To a layperson like me.
Well, he just did. You weren't listening.
You can select your model in Fusion. And yeah. So I've got this tool bench. I select all the pieces and then say, make me a cut list. And so what it'll do is if I'm using 4x8 sheets, it will lay out all the pieces flat on a 4x8 sheet. Mm. I cut my plywood sheets in half so I could use them, so I could work on them in the shop. So I have 4x4 sheets. And so I told it, I've got 4x4 sheets, and it knows based on your, it knows the grain direction because I'm using an appearance on all my pieces. So it will flip all the pieces. It will group like pieces together. Like if there's a bunch of pieces that are 2.5 inches wide, it'll group them together and then throw them on a 4x4 sheet. And then I know how to optimize my plywood.
And Rob, you, Bob, you improved that? I called you Rob because Bob, my guy, Rob.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we made our own version of it, and it's maybe more specialized for how I use it. But
that's so cool. You know,
but I think that's also part of something like that is deciding how, if you're going to write something that solves a problem like that, do you write it to you? Which is what we've done so far. We've written it to how
this way you start.
And then how do you turn that into something that's going to be as usable as possible for as many people as possible? You know, we spent a lot of time talking and thinking about, like, what is the actual output? People, are they wanting to make plans from this? Are they just wanting to be able to take a cut list into their shop and cut the thing one time and do it for themselves? Is it something they want to share? Do they want to brand it? Do you want to be able to control what it looks like? There's, like, all of this stuff that, you know, when we started on it and throughout the process, we've said it could be any of the endpoint could be any of these number of things. How much do we want to invest? What do we have to maintain? How do we charge for that? Who's going to work on the software when we are not able to work on the software? Like, there's a whole lot that goes into it. And so having that initial algorithm and that initial process for Fusion model to output, that's kind of the easy part. Like, the hard part is everything after that. So, and one of the goals with it is not only for it to be, is for it to not only be useful in Fusion, it's for it to be useful in other things, but have the same kind of end point, the same output. So, yeah, I don't know. If people think that's something that they would like to actually see come to market, bother me about it.
I'm bothering you right now. Okay. When it's ready, I want to be one of your testers.
Okay, yeah. I mean, you can test what we have so far. I can send it to you, but...
Sweet.
Yeah. Anyway, it's one of those things that it's... You know, we've talked about products many times on here and of how I've looked for the thing. And I think it probably is that or something similar to that. Figuring out how to take what I do all day long, every day, that makes money enough for me to survive and keep that going or change that enough to be able to then invest in, like, let's write a piece of software yeah. and figure out how to put it on a server and for have people have accounts and to, you know, how do we charge for it? And how, you know, there's like a whole, it's a whole nother business. It's a whole nother thing. So
what is the gap between it does for you what you needed to do? Now you need to generalize it a little bit more for an audience. What is that generalization that needs to be done?
I mean, I don't really know, because I think if I knew that, then it would be easy to do.
Gotcha.
But
yeah,
I think it's stuff like little simple things, like the grain direction thing was a consideration early because it didn't matter early on. But then, like, you have to think about that a little bit. Having multiple types of materials that are not necessarily sheet goods is another consideration, because I personally, I design a lot of things that are like half plywood and half other stuff, you know? And so taking that into consideration, whether people have like the half sheet and full sheet, if people want to be able to knock down something into smaller chunks first and then rotate those to get the cuts in, if people want to be able to do non-perpendicular cuts to the material. Like, there's a lot of stuff that I just don't know if people would need, or if it's like, for instance, so if you needed two pieces of 4x4 material with one 45 degree cut on one side of both pieces, the way that you would actually do that is you cut a 45 degree cut down the middle of the sheet. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, if you were just thinking that's what you needed. But then how do you show that on a two-dimensional cut map? Because you're looking down on a 45-degree cut, or you're looking down on an angle that you can't describe from a profile. So then, like, how do you show that? Is that something people need to actually have described in their cut list, or do they just know that they need to cut that edge at a 45-degree angle? There's stuff like that that you have to figure out how to describe. And then you have to look at who's the customer, how tech savvy are they, how much handholding do they need. And these are the problems of software in general. I mean, that's why there's a big usability difference between, for instance, Apple and Microsoft. They look at their customer and what they need differently, and they provide a different amount of handholding. And you have to do the same kind of thing, I think, with even simple things like, you know, web interfaces and stuff like that. So
can I tell you one thing that's the limitation that I reached with MapBoards Pro?
Yeah, please.
So my tool bench is made up of 3/4-inch plywood for most of it. And then the drawers and the drawer face is made up of 1/2-inch plywood. And so what I would do is only select all the 3/4-inch stuff, open up the plugin, and then it spits it out onto plywood. Now I need to do the 1/2-inch. When I go to do the 1/2-inch ones and I select all the 1/2-inch pieces, I open up the plugin and I hit go, it removes the first layout, the 3/4-inch layout, and only then shows the 1/2-inch layout. So I can't have two different size pieces of plywood within the same model.
Okay, we already solved that.
awesome.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't want to, like, this is a promotion for a thing that doesn't exist, but yeah, we've already, that's a thing we've already handled. Anyway, bug me about it if you want me to, not you two necessarily, but people, if you want us to make that into a real thing that you can buy. that's the key.
Yeah.
You're going to have to buy it.
It's got to be worth the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, not sure how we got to that, but I agree. MapBoards is an excellent solution available today. So you can do that. I have been thinking about that product on a regular basis for a long time. So that's part of where my time goes. But the video that's coming out this weekend, hopefully, we don't have it done yet, but hopefully it should be out this weekend, is, I showed you two pictures of this, but we needed kind of a sofa table behind our sofa in our basement. And I've been wanting to have something back there just to put drinks on and, you know, stuff like that. But then also trying to figure out how to store all of our board games down there so that my kids, who are now hanging out in our renovated basement a whole lot, can play games. And I saw this video by Andy Klein, our buddy Andy, and he took a standing desk and put a slab on top of it as the top and then hung 3D printers underneath it. And so when you lift the desk, it lifts the printers with it and it reveals some storage that's on the floor. And so I stole that idea, gave him credit for it in the video, but stole that idea and made a lifting sofa table behind the couch. And so I took two frames and cut the metal of the frames down to make it more narrow, and then built a top and built storage underneath it, and they hide behind the couch. And it's cool.
Like, does it lift up like a television?
It does lift up like a television. And they're Alexa controlled, so I can tell it to lift them. And there's two of them independently. One has old video game systems, one has board games in them. And they just come up from behind the couch. And it's cool. Like, it's a really cool thing. It's one of those things I really hope people watch it, because I like most of my ideas, you know, like I think they're cool, but I realize that not all of them are going to hit with other people. And this is one of those that I really hope people watch, because I think it's just a cool idea.
Awesome.
So yeah, I've been working on that. That was actually done a couple of weeks ago, but the video is finally hopefully going to be wrapped up this week. And then we have, I think we're putting out 4 videos in a row, which is, it's just the way it's worked out with sponsors, but it's kind of unusual for me these days to do that many. And so I am finished the next one. I'm already on the next one and it'll be done today. And then I got to go on to the next one. And, you know, so it's kind of crazy, but that's what I've been up to. We still have questions, a few questions, left over from the Patreon questions that came in. And I really have not looked through them again to figure out, like, there's a bunch of good ones, but like, I don't really have one picked out. So this is a good one. This is from Jason Bailey. And we don't have to go through these quickly. So I know last couple of weeks we've tried to fit in a bunch of questions, but it could be that, you know, some of these are the whole show. This is from Jason Bailey. Which change have you seen in the other two over the course of the last decade that has surprised you the most? Obviously, the three of us have changed quite a bit in a decade. Mm.
Somehow, I still feel like I'm exactly the same, aside from all the collection of junk I have. But I know I'm not.
So I'll go, because one comes to mind from you saying that. I think one of the things that I've seen, the biggest change in Jimmy, a big change, is your vulnerability. Mm. I think from the day that I met you, you've always been open to talk about anything. Like I mentioned before, you gave us a hug, like the first time we ever physically met. Like you're a loving, you know, person, an engaging person.
It's not going to make me cry.
Probably, yeah. You cry a lot. I cry a lot. But I think publicly, at least on here, and maybe it's just because it's like the three of us just chatting, I think you've become a lot more vulnerable about stuff, about just like the life stuff, the outside of the YouTube stuff.
Yeah.
And maybe that's not actually a change in you as much as it is us just getting to know each other better.
And you, honestly, I mean, I know as I'm stealing your answer, same with you. You know how you say every week this has become more of a therapy session for both of you guys.
Yeah.
Me, I just always keep my mouth blabbering. So, I mean, it's I don't need this hour to cry and whine and overshare. That happens all the time. No, but that's possibly true. I mean, a part of that comes from we talk all day long with the camera, sometimes without. And it's hard to remember exactly when to keep it in and when to protect what you're thinking. But I also do know that over the years that I've gotten so many wonderful emails from people that said, because you shared this, it helped me. Because you talk about that, that it helped me. Of course, you know, my non-drinking for so many years is a big one. But just in general, and you know, the breakup that I went through, which I didn't really overshare about it. I tried not to, but you know, it's a common thing that a lot of people go through and try and go through gracefully as best you can. It's, you know, and like I said, it's just difficult sometimes to remember when the camera's on and when the microphone's on and when it's not. And if you do decide to share when it's on, you just tread lightly. Try not to make enemies.
I think it's a hard question to answer, because when I look at the both of you, I see what has stayed the same. And what I admire about you is both of you have still have the, it seems like you have the same purpose as when you started out. Like, Jimmy made things for the love of making things, and you still make things for the love of making things. And that has been constant throughout. Bob's focus of sharing what he's doing to help others and increase their skills and their confidence has maintained throughout. I see that more than I see the change, and I really admire, and success and money and views has not changed that in you guys at all. You guys don't fall for, I need to make some algorithm videos. You still do what you've always done, and I admire that quite a bit.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. You're muted, Jimmy. You're talking, but I can't hear you.
I said thank you, but also I said, Dave, with you, it's interesting to watch how you jump into something wholeheartedly and then jump out of it. You're like, not for me. And you sell it all off. And honestly, I admire that, because I wish I could do that more often. Because everything lingers. I'm always like, oh, well, you know what? I think I might do that again in 16 years from now. So let me just keep all that equipment nearby and possess it and linger and worry. But and also stepping outside your comfort zone with doing more art stuff. And I remember the pencil holder. I thought that was a big breaking point for you when you made the melted crayon pencil holder.
Right here. And here it is as a reminder.
Yeah, I remember you were just like, it was a fail project to some extent, and then you were just like, I'm just going to do it, don't matter.
Yeah.
And it was, as I recall, it was a big letting go for you.
The inside is, this is Bubinga, but you can't see a piece of Bubinga in it. and it was just like, you know what, this is not turning out the way it is, so let's just let it be what it wants to be. And who cares if there's beautiful, expensive wood underneath there? Let's cover it all up in colorful crayons. I love doing, I think one of the biggest things that I have just dived into was the whole go-kart racing. It's so fun for me to just pick up something new, go all in, learn everything I can, because I didn't know anything about engines when I got started. And, I learned how to rebuild and build up a new engine from scratch, so much so that I made a video on it, because there was no good information on how to build a racing go-kart engine. And I learned so much just from trying to make that video. And and I just sold all my go-kart stuff. And I'm like, I'm done with that. That was fun for a little bit. Look, what's going to be the next thing? And that's really exciting for me.
No, it's cool.
So when it comes to change, though, with David, over that time, the thing that I see is it's interesting because it's kind of in contrast to what you said, but I still think it's the same. I see a focusing in you that has, that has really happened over time. Like, I remember early on your focus, like you had a looser aesthetic within your work and within the design of your stuff, all the drunken woodworker stuff. You had a more broad woodworking focus. There's a cricket in here. Can you hear that?
I can hear it. Yeah. Cut.
It's like in this room. That's so obnoxious. I apologize.
He probably has headphones on his own microphone.
Yeah. We've got a fourth member joining us today. Welcome, Cricket.
Yeah, Cricket. But I think over time, like, you've really, by diving into those different things and trying them out, you're like, you're taking some things and you're pulling them in and they stay. And then you're trying some things, and then you know that that's done. Like, I don't need to do this anymore. I don't need to try this anymore. I don't need to do go-karts or whatever. But it has turned into, that has all caused, I think, you to focus more toward the aesthetic that is natural to you and the thing that you really enjoy. And that's a weird cricket.
Yeah, I got crickets too, guys.
And to, like, you know, actually focus on the art and your development as an artist. I think that's interesting that you started more broadly, but you have definitely over time focused in, and you have a direction, even if that those things will come in and out over mm-hmm. time. I think your direction has gotten a little more straight. Is that fair?
Yeah, I always feel like every moment in my journey is happened for a reason, because I'm working towards something and I don't even know what I'm working towards yet. But I went to school for graphic design. That was so I could learn this thing. I worked as an engineer at a studio. That was so I could learn how to do audio. I was an assistant wedding photographer. That was so I could learn how to operate a camera. And the go-kart stuff got me into working with metal and welding and tube bending. As I tried to make my own frame, I failed. Or I didn't fail. I just didn't finish it. But all of those things are adding up to what I am supposed to do next. And I don't know what my next obsession is going to be, but I know it's going to happen. It's going to be expensive, and it's going to be like, this is going to be my focus for a little bit. But that seems to, it excites me and it fuels me. And I'm collecting right now. I feel like I'm still collecting so I could do the thing that I'm supposed to do when I'm old.
That's a good way to put it. Cool. Jason also asked, what do you think the ratio of planned topic or tangent topic is, and has it changed over the course of the decade?
Well, it was more planned.
Yeah, I think early on we would spend more time like figuring out what the topic was before we started recording, like day of. And
these I think days, we got jaded, though. Topic. When we start meandering, we always end up somewhere good. So that's spoiled us a little bit, where we can come in so seat of the pants and really go into it.
Yeah.
We always find something.
It feels more authentic when we don't have a topic and then one just randomly pops up because somebody's dealing with something or there's a problem mm-hmm. to solve.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even the pre-planned ones, I think, are still that. They're still, well, this week I was dealing with whatever, or this was on my mind or whatever. And so it's still present and relevant. this one's interesting. I don't know that I have an answer for this one, but this is from Adam. What's one thing that each of you have built that you wish you had not built or had not made a video about building?
Ooh, that's interesting. I remember one thing, the first thing that comes to mind was a really failed video for me. A friend insisted that I make this thing for him, and I'm like, I'll turn it into a video. But I got so far into it where I didn't like the design, but I had to stick with it, and it just didn't work. I made a corner caddy shelf that holds a handgun for my friend who lives in a town where you can have a handgun. And it was so I think I used a BB gun in my video. There's a corner shelf that drops down, and it was just a bad design, and I realized too far into it that it was just a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
And I just pushed through. I mean, there's a few of those out of 850 videos. There's a few like that. And that's the one that comes to mind, where you're just into it and then maybe there's a sponsor in it. And you just put it out anyway. And then people hate watch it and you get views anyway. You're like, this is ridiculous. This is such a horrible idea. But there's been a few. But I if you look at the overarching beginning, middle, and end, you have to power through some of these things. You can't nitpick every single decision you make if you're going to make your life a career as an artist or a filmmaker. You have to just keep going and sit back and go, all right, I learned from that one. For instance, a parallel would be a comedian that records all of his sets, or a speaker that records everything you say, which is just essentially what we're doing. When you sit back and look at, you go, well, you know what? I'll make sure I won't do that again. Make sure I don't do that stupid mistake again. And More often than not, it's managing your time so that you have time to recorrect. Not always do we have the time to recorrect. So we just stay the course of something that's not great. So I've had a few duds.
David, do you have something?
I can't think of anything And there, I'm sure there is, but I am either very forgetful or I don't tend to look back very much. It's one of those two. I'm sure I have put a few projects in the fire. Like sometimes, there'll be things laying around. I'm like, I don't want this side table that I made anymore. It's just going to go to the Goodwill, or this thing that I built wasn't as sturdy as what I expected. It's going to go in the fire. And, but I can't think of what those are because I'm either forgetful or I'm just looking forward.
Yeah. I think I tend to just like move on. So I don't really dwell on the fact that, you know, something didn't turn out like I wanted it to. I think more than anything, if I had that response that like, I wish I hadn't done this thing, it would be because of performance, not because of the thing. Because I don't know that I've ever made a thing that I just didn't want to make because I thought it would make a good video.
With me, more often, it's just I realize I went down a path that I don't hate the subject. I don't hate the concept. I just don't hate the solution. I mean, I just don't love the solution. And that's really where I find myself in some videos where I'm too far in to change everything. And I'm like, I got all this in the can. I got to publish by this. But that's my fault for trying to publish a video every 7 days.
I can definitely go back and improve every single thing I've ever made. I can look at each thing and then learn something. And I'm like, oh, if I ever do that again, which I don't, I would do it better.
Yeah. You know, I've never done that until this last, the video that I did about redoing the camera stand. And I was pretty hesitant to do that because I was afraid that it would look like I was just trying to make the same video again or something. I don't know. Like, how do you make two videos about this basically the same thing and with a different thumbnail? And like, how do you get people to realize that they're not the same video? And so I was a little hesitant. But the second one performed better than the first one did. Which, and there were quite a few comments that were like, thanks for coming back to this and trying to make it better, you know, for whatever reason. And so that, well, actually, it has performed better, not in total, but, you know, in the same, over the same
time. It will over time, yeah.
Yeah, probably. And so that was kind of interesting to me. And it's not something I want to do a lot of, but I think it gave me some hope that some of the things that when I get to the end and I go, oh, like I should have done this. Like maybe there is room to come back in a while and, you know, add up significant improvements that you can make to something. Cause it's something I've always kind of avoided, but, Jimmy, were you trying to say something?
No.
Oh, I thought you put your hand up. Yes. Jimmy in the back. So this is from Daniel, who's been around for a long time. What do you think the biggest change has been because of the podcast for you individually? Has it had a direct impact, and what impact has it had directly on you or indirectly on your making and how you interact with others?
It's a great topic of conversation when we meet somebody that's a fan. It gives us obviously something to talk about, and we could discuss topics in person that we discussed. Another interesting thing is when you meet somebody and you're chatting somebody for the first time and they don't know you or what you do, you go, oh, yeah, I do a podcast. Oh, I do a podcast. You do a podcast? That's so interesting. Did you just start? I go, no, I started 8 years ago, 9 years ago. 9 years ago? Is it do really well? I'm like, yeah, I guess. I don't know. I don't even know how it does. I got to ask Bob. And how do you make money with that? You know, so it's another interesting.
And you're like, I don't know. I'll have to ask Bob.
I don't know. I'll have to ask Bob. it's just another layer on top of all the different layers when you meet somebody new. And now everybody has a podcast. So everybody you meet, you're like, oh yeah, what is your podcast? What is, oh, this is my podcast. I do a podcast about napkins. I do a podcast about cups. I do a podcast about making things. It's nice when people often ask me, what is the one thing that you're most proud of? And I say my collection of YouTube videos that I created. And this is a second to that. My collection of conversations that we've recorded. How many now? 2,000? How many conversations?
Yeah, we're at episode 8,500 today.
No, what was it?
It's 461 today.
461. So we're going to have a party at 500, right? We're going to do making sure. It 500? We got that
we'll
booty.
To
we're so good at planning parties.
Yeah.
We'll put all the information on the postcard that we send out.
I do remember thinking when we started the podcast, like, there's already 3 or 4 other woodworking podcasts. How are we going to fit in? What's going to be, you know? And then here we are 10 years later, still.
Yeah.
I think that the biggest thing for me is the podcast allows me to share progress with what I'm working on and keeps me excited about what I'm working on. Because we talk every week about what I'm working on. So I get to talk to 2 like-minded people who also build things and understand what I'm going through. I'm like, hey, check out this thing. I can send you guys texts. You guys also send texts of in progress things. And that's always fun. It's always encouraging. And then the audience, gets to share in that as well. And when somebody comments on a YouTube video and they reference the podcast, it just feels good. Those comments just feel good because you know that it's almost like, I could hang out with that person because they watch my videos, they watch Bob's videos, they watch Jimmy's videos, and they listen to the podcast. That's a good person. You know that's a good person.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. I think, like, this has been, for me over the last 10 years, has been an opportunity to not be solitary. And I'm not, like, solitary like I'm always... I work with people. I've worked with people over time.
I agree with that. It's a place for us to.
Yep.
We have common stuff. Like, we have common struggle. We have common work. We have common, you know, pursuits. And just being able to kind of catch up about that stuff. I think if we hadn't had this over 10 years, I'm not sure that any of the progress that I've made towards what I want it to be would be there, because I think a lot of the changes and the growth that I've had has been based on your experiences. You sharing your experience and your everything with me, which has informed what I'm able to do and what I think is possible and what I'm trying to accomplish. And so, you know, I think just having a sounding board, you know, it's like there was a question a couple of weeks ago about, like, how do you find a co-host? I think that was one of the ones last week or week before. And I don't know how you find that co-host. I don't know how you find that person to have that camaraderie with and that, like, shared experience. But I think it's pretty necessary. And I hadn't really thought about this until right now. But looking back, I think if we hadn't had these conversations for 10 years... I think, at least me, I'm not going to speak for you guys, but I think I would be in a really different place with the content stuff, with the whole business. I think would be in a very, very different place.
So, I know I'm not that much older than you guys.
Yeah, you, I mean.
10 years? I'm exactly 10 years older than both of you guys. More or less. 8, 9, 10 years older than you guys. But I always learned so much from my younger students, and that's how I feel about you guys. I learned so much about technology. I try. But what did you guys call it? What was that thing called? Map Place? What is that thing you talked about today?
Map Board Pro.
Mapboard Pro. I just wrote that down. I didn't write that down. But, you know, stuff like that. And I remember in the beginning when you guys both had CNC machines. I was like, I want a CNC machine too. But I eventually got one, and here we are, all this technology later. I don't think I would have gotten it as fast as I did if it wasn't for you two guys. Laser cutters, you know, you guys were always on that. You were the younger generation inspiring me, just like the experience I had with my students.
But is there a word for a good jealousy? Because when you guys are doing something, I'm like, I want to do that too. Like when you guys both got cars and I didn't have the Impala yet. I was like, man, I'm jealous of these guys. I want to do that too. And then... however the universe works, I ended up with the Impala, which I'm now trying to sell. I was like, okay, I was jealous. I don't have the time to do that. I'm gonna move on to something else. But I'm constantly jealous of what you guys are doing, in a good way, in the best way possible.
Yeah,
there's got to be a word for that.
Yeah,
I don't know what it is.
Pleasantly envious.
Inspired.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. All right, so we got another one here. This one's, I don't know that I have an answer for this one. This is from Nick. He says some very nice things. Thank you for those nice things. The question is, over the years, you've all shared your learning of so many new skills, but is there a making skill that you would never, ever learn?
Huh.
Like, is there anything that you actively do not want to know how to do?
Programming.
Really?
I mean, I've tried it and I just can't get into it. And when I there's a block there when it's like, well, wouldn't you want to be able to do this and that? And I'm like, not sure. I don't even know. Like, I have like complete writer's block when it comes to programming. And I tried with Arduinos early on, inspired by Maker Faire. And I'm like, okay, the light goes on now. I can't think of anything I want to do. I know there's millions of things to do. I see everybody who gets into these things solves every problem with an Arduino. But I just can't figure out anything I want to do that'll do that. And then if I do think of something, I'll just think to myself, I'm like, oh, that's going down a road. I don't even know where to go. Forget it. I'll just figure out a different way around it. Like, it would be nice to, like, have Arduinos that open doors and this and that and whatever. But I just, like, you know what? That's fine. I just live without it. I don't need that. I'll just turn the key. There are a million compromises like that I make over a year when I'm thinking for a second. Oh, wouldn't it be cool if? And it's like, yeah, I'm gonna do that. I did have a project going into COVID. And I was going to work with my friend Mike Dubno. Jocko did a video on the Millionaire Maker. That's our friend Mike, who's very, very skilled at doing programming and robotics. And I was going to do this big project for Guinness. And it was supposed to be due like April 2020. And it was going to be, if I was going to make the, if anybody looks up the Guinness clock, this thing that was made in the 1950s, this big clock with all these Guinness advertising props, like the birds and the little man with the top hat, all this stuff, all these Guinness things on a big giant clock that goes off three times. We were going to make it for a lobby of a building in Manhattan. And Mike was going to help me do all the robotics. I was going to do all the model making and everything. And we were going down that path, but COVID thwarted that whole project. Thankfully, because I was so nervous that this thing's going to have to work 24 hours a day for like two, three months. It was going to be this installation. And so that was going to be, that's my education on robotics and programming and Arduino and Raspberry Pi, because that's how Mike, we were planning it, but it never happened.
Okay. So last week or the week before, we talked about collaborations and how I was saying that I have a hard time with collaborations because I see myself as a generalist working with other generalists like you is difficult because we have overlapping skill set in almost every way, even though we were better at different things. Now, you just said that you have had ideas for things that you have skirted around because you didn't want to do that part of it. So the next time you have an idea for a project and you go, oh, I could use an Arduino for that thing, except that I don't want to, you can pause and call me and we can collaborate because that's a place where I can be useful. Okay. He's like, yeah, whatever.
No, it's good. It's good. So Arduino is my block.
Yeah.
Bob, Dave, blocks? What are your blocks? What are you never going to do?
You're all guapos. I don't want to... Only a few people got that joke. Oh, I don't want to... Say, I don't want to put that limitation on myself. Like, I have absolutely no desire to carve something out of a solid piece of wood. None.
But you might.
But I might. I might change next week because I might see something that inspires me. So I don't want to put that limitation on myself.
I'm kind of the same way. Like, I want to learn all of the things to have learned them. Not that I'll ever use them twice, but, I can say that I probably won't ever go down the path of super fine woodworking to where I build the skills that a lot of other people like really focus on, and they get really good at that stuff. That is a skill set that I will never see through because I'm not motivated to, not that I'm against it. Like, I would love to know how to do it, but the effort that you have to put in to get really good at that stuff, I will never justify to myself. So I could say that, but like, dang, if I had the free time and I could learn it, even if I never used it, I would still learn it.
Yeah. My hobby is learning stuff.
Yeah. I'm sure there's probably other things. I mean, there are things like resin art. Like, I have nothing against it. I think it's cool. I don't know how I would use it, so I'm not motivated to play with it. But, like you said, David, I mean, that could change next week. I could find some, like, thing that I all of a sudden have to know how to do, you know.
Yeah, you have this Arduino thing that lights up different things at different points, but you need colored resin to fill in the space, you know. You'll find a use for it, and then you'll end up doing that thing someday.
I say that, and the door on my office actually has a resin thing that I made, so I don't know. Maybe I'm full of it. Okay, let's do one more. Let's do one more. I forgot about this one. This one's from Everett. It says, you brush on this all the time, but you never go into deep detail. How much time does being a professional YouTuber take? 40 hours a week? More? How much of it isn't in the part in front of the camera? What's a week like for a YouTuber? And he goes on to say, like, he knows this is like inside baseball kind of stuff, but it sounds like he's pretty, like he said, as an example, you sometimes say going through email takes a large part of my time. What kind of emails are you dealing with?
So that's a bunch of questions, but I chip away emails all day long. And so I'm always chipping away emails and comments all day long, which I try to make sure that I'm in the moment when I'm with people, but when I'm not with people, I'm chipping away. So if I'm with my girlfriend or people or friends, I'm not like trying to keep my head buried in the phone, but I do chip away all day long. So I get rid of stuff as it comes in. But in general, I spend, if every week is a filming week or if a week becomes a filming week, I spend about 20% of my time actually filming, and the rest is correcting after the camera's off, knowing I got a good take, but I could just completely do something different so the net result looks the same. There are a lot of times I'll shoot something and be like, that doesn't work in physical life, but I shot something that already looks good enough. Let me leave it. No one's going to know the difference whether I leave that piece or if I reshoot, it's going to look the same. If that makes sense. So in general, like I just did the saddlebags. I didn't film every single stitch I made. It took hours to stitch all that. I only filmed few minutes at a time with time lapse, so that's why I say only about 20-30% is spent actually in front of the camera. The rest is behind the scenes. Dave, you had your hand up.
Yeah, I think this goes back to a book I read 20 years ago, Tim Ferriss's The 4-Hour Workweek. If you give yourself 40 hours, you will fill 40 hours. If you give yourself 70 hours, you'll fill 70 hours. And that's not just YouTubers. I think that's just people in general. You will fill the space with the amount of time that you are given. And I
tinker a lot. Every week I tinker a lot.
And that's why it's really hard to say I work 50 hours a week or I work 60 hours. I don't know. It's like let's say you have the radio on and you listen to music all day. And you're like, how long did you listen to music today? Well, the radio was on for 12 hours, but part of it, I turned the volume way down. So I was barely listening to it. Another part, I turned it way up because I was really into a song. And so the volume goes up and down all day. And so maybe I'm thinking about work all day, but the intensity varies.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
That's a great analogy. Yeah, I mean, so for many years now, I've tried my best in general, an average, to do like a 9-to-5-ish thing, like try to keep it within those hours. And, you know, oftentimes if nobody's around, I'll work till 6 or 7, but that doesn't happen super often. My mornings over the last couple of years have gotten starting a little bit later because I just take more time in the morning to read and run and, you know, just do different things. But generally, I think I kind of stick to 40 hours a week or less, but I try not to do more than that at all because I want my life to be my life, not work. And then as far as the email thing, like looking at I keep on top of my inbox pretty well, just a little bit, kind of like you, Jimmy, just a little bit every day. But currently I have 87 messages in my inbox.
What the heck?
And they are... somebody wants to sponsor me with a pillow. delete that one. I now have 86 emails. Like I have a Jimmy's bunch phone, that are, 100... yeah, Jimmy, you're just, that's disgusting. 132,000 unread emails. Gross. In your, that's weird. But
away.
Like, just to give you an idea of like what comes in, I have a whole bunch of Patreon messages from people. I have a bunch of, you know, stuff around like kids sports and band and school and stuff as well. So there's a bunch that is not business related, but you know, there's sponsor opportunities. I have a lot of comments and questions from our online courses, things that I go in and respond to, questions from Etsy, questions from our website. I have comment emails from the website where people just want to say nice things or ask questions. You know, there's like sponsorship documents and stuff to keep track of where things are. There's updates from all of the different services we use that, you know, you have to like read the thing, whether you need to like update something on YouTube or you have to check some terms of service on something. There's a bunch of stuff, and most of it is something you can do and then just check it off and get it out of the way. But for me, a lot of these things, I feel like they deserve thoughtful thoughtful response. Especially a lot of the comments. If somebody's going to take the time to write me an email and it's not just like, hey, you're cool, thanks for doing what you do, which is nice. If it's a thoughtful question to me, I think it deserves a thoughtful response. And if I don't have time to give that right away, then the email sits there and waits for me to have time to actually respond to it. And those things add up, especially like when I say I'm doing like a day of email, it's me going back and catching up on those. I need to have a thoughtful response to these people kind of days.
Bob, you just forwarded something to me the other day. It's like somebody said they wanted to, I think I asked a question on last week's show and they wanted to chime in. And they said something to the effect of, I don't know how to contact David. Will you forward this to him? And it's because I turn off all DMs on all social media, if that function, if that availability is there. And I want things only in email or only in YouTube comments. I don't check. I used to say, you know, just tweet at me, but I don't check Twitter anymore. But I try to funnel all my communication to one source, which is email.
Good save. Way to block that cough. Oh, and there's another one. Anybody who's not watching, it just got super quiet.
I got a cough attack. And I do stay up on my emails. It's so there are a lot of sponsorship opportunities. A lot of them come overnight and I wake up to them. Most of those are nothing that I want to be involved in. And so if a sponsorship opportunity comes to me and I'm checking email at 7:30 in the morning, that is not a good one. It's usually some crazy laser company, a Temu thing. And
yeah, I got an email recently. They were congratulating me on my success in the beauty industry and really wanted to work with me.
Oh, I was pretty excited about that. That went to the wrong person. Yeah. You do look beautiful.
Well, thank you. Cool. Any other info you want to share there around being a YouTuber?
It is still my dream. It is still super fun.
As a career, it's great because I get to utilize and play with and do so many different disciplines, and I get crazy cool tools, and I wouldn't change it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Jimmy's like they say, a dream job is still a job. So it's still work.
Yeah,
but I think the flexibility for me of the whole thing means I can decide how much work I want to put into it. You know, and that how much you reap is how much you sow, right? But how much I put into it is based on what I want my life to be like. And I think I'm super blessed to be in that position to be able to make that decision, because a lot of people don't get to make that decision as easily. So. Cool. Well, we still have other questions, but I think that's good. We'll maybe save some of these to use down the road when we can't come up with something to talk about.
There we go.
Well, big thanks to everybody again from Patreon for all of those questions and for just being around, you know, and, supporting the show over this long, long time that we've been doing it. We are very grateful for you all. Everybody on Patreon gets the after show. So no matter what level you support at, if you go to Patreon, log in, you go up in the top right corner, there's a link for an RSS feed, and that is the after show. You can put that in your podcast player. The show notes for this or for that show also have the video one. If you want to watch the after show in video, it's on YouTube only for Patreon people. So that is available to everybody. So go get it if you are a supporter. And if you're not, you can get it by becoming a supporter. You can go to patreon.com/makingit. Join up at any level. But I always got to thank our top supporters because they're awesome. That's Nick Ryan, Corey Ward, Albers Woodworks, Works by Solo, Chad from Mancrafting, Chad's Custom Creations, Rich at Low End Design, Odin Leather Goods, Sean Beckner, Scott at Dad It Yourself DIY, Jeff at the New Janky Workshop, Warren Works, Michael Menegin, Crabtree Creative, and Matthias Garnow.
Yes.
But all the other people as well are awesome. So thank you all very, very much for the support and for the questions. Oh, bless you.
I tried to hit the mute button. I missed.
Yeah, that's all right. I don't have anything to recommend. Imagine that. But you said you did, so you go first.
All right. This is a channel I probably recommended a few times, but it is Van Neistat. His latest video is How I Would Start My Life If I Were 18 Now.
I saw that. It's good.
It's good. I mentioned earlier that I try not to look back too much. But I think it is important to look back.
I like
back.
How specific he was.
Yeah, he was very
so specific.
Right? Like, I would do this. I would move to this city. I would get this truck. It was really good. Yeah.
He's going to start a business making shelves. I thought that was funny.
Did you think that was a good idea?
Yeah.
Because shelves totally are hard if you don't know what you're doing. Yeah.
And you know, honestly, that kind of sparked in me when I watched that. If you specialize in anything that's like overlooked discipline, if you specialize in it, anybody would do well.
Yeah.
If you're dedicated and you specialize in the video, if you didn't see it, he talks about specializing in making shelves for girls in college dorm homes, guys and girls. He would move to a college town and just make shelves for them so they could put their tchotchkes on it, which is kind of half a joke, but I think it's a legitimate thing. Could be a legitimate thing. My recommendation is Dave's Auto Center. You guys may have seen him pops up a lot. He's got a lot of viral videos talking about he works in a very clean environment and he'll have like a Ford engine completely dismantled. Go, this is the reason why this engine exploded. This engine costs $20,000 to replace. This car only has 6,000 miles on it. He's so thorough and right to the point. And it's almost like looking at a surgeon. His videos are shot very cleanly in a very clean shop. And you could tell he runs a very, very, very tight ship. Little like crazy, like a little too crazy, but that's what makes his videos so on point. Like
his videos. What was the name of it?
Dave's Auto Center. Okay. Dave's Auto Center is Centerville. I don't know where that is in the world, but
it's in Centerville, probably.
No. Family run business, 34 years.
Cool.
He's got about 750,000 subscribers, but his reels are what really pulled me in. I never even watched one of his long form videos. I only see his reels.
Cool. Mine is actually a podcast I was on, but it's called Faith Talks Wood podcast, and it's these guys that talk about their faith and they talk about woodworking together.
Oh, that's cool.
And they interview people and stuff, and so they had me on to talk about those things, and it was a really good conversation. We had a good time. We ended up the episode's like an hour and 15 minutes long, but we talked for quite a while, so it was a good time. So if you're into that, go check that out. You guys got anything else for this week?
That's it.
I'll be at the Graphic Expo. If this is Friday when this is airing, I'll be at the Graphic Expo in Charlotte with Graz and Derek. I don't know. We haven't planned to hang out, but maybe we'll figure out something in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Cool, cool, cool. All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
See you next time.
Thank you. Love you. Bye. Love you. Bye.